extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, Club and Country from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, Kalen Carr, David Goss. All the energy I'm conjuring, that I'm riding right now, is for Canada. And I'm so torn, because that was disappointing for the U.S., but it is everything for Canada. We are live right now after U.S.-Canada 2-0 win. For the new boys, the undefeated boys in the octagonal, the number ones on 22 points, John Herdman's Canada. Yeah, man, it's their world. We're living in it. If you're listening live, awesome. Thanks for being with us. Tweet at me. If you're not, you're probably on the podcast feed. We put these up every single game night after the octagonal. And after this match day, at least the beginning of it, I think Jamaica just scored against Panama in Panama, which is a huge result for all three teams at the top. It's Canada. It's their CONCACAF, Doyle. It's their octagonal. The U.S., we're also Rans. Maybe not, but it feels like this is... I mean, Milan Borjan's waving flags. They're banging on the drum with Jonathan Osorio and the supporters. This is their region right now, period.
Yeah, they're bossing qualification. They are atop the table through 10 games, unbeaten. They've gone to the Azteca, they've gone to the U.S., and they've taken a point on the road there, and then they beat Mexico and the U.S. in Canada. That's what the best team in the region does, and the fact that they did it without Alphonso Davies and Steven Eustachio, they played the way that we thought they were going to play. They were really opportunistic, dangerous on the break. It was very much a bend don't break at the back. Borjan made a couple of saves, but like they got big moments from their best players. And when you do that at home and you have a lot of talent, you're probably going to win the game. They deserved it. And they did it. And they're coming to the World Cup. I told you the other night, they're coming to the World Cup.
I'm going
to
tell you right now, I had the thought in the second half when Sam Adekube jets into the open field on his own and curls it early left foot around match. I was like, he jinxed it. He jinxed the U.S. and saying Canada, they would need this win. They got this win. Here they go. You have two hearts, Dave. Which one's beating the hardest right now?
Well, you can't feel anything but good for people who have wanted this for such a long time in Canada, who have fought for it. I think for a lot of us, it's the same battles of, it's a niche sport. People don't care. Then when people care, they only want to watch Chelsea, and you're kind of fighting for this thing that's close to home that you believe in, that you want to matter. And so you can't feel anything but good for those people who were at the stadium or unfortunately because of COVID couldn't make it there and all those things. And then all of the pieces in this team, right? And you're talking about kids and young players who grew up right near this stadium, you know, in Toronto, in Ontario. You're talking about people from all different backgrounds that make up Canada, that make this national team great, and players stepping up in big moments when stars aren't there. And look at Milan Borjan. And we've talked about it since the beginning of qualifying of, is he the better goalkeeper than Maxime Crépeau? I don't know. But he has this emotional leadership role in this team. And everyone who's gone to a game in this cycle has said he's always pumping up the crowd behind the goal, interacting with the crowd in off moments to get them into it. You saw him off his line, you know, calming Richie Larea down, calming Marc-Anthony Kay down in different fights. The way he celebrates the goal and then the big save he makes, that's a guy who's been through a lot of BS. He's been through a bunch of crap with this national team. And now he gets this moment where he beats the U.S. He beats Mexico at home in Canada, goes on the road, you get results. Like, so you can't feel anything but good for people like that. And obviously in our time covering MLS, Richie Larea is as good a person as you have. And he is such a dick on the field. And it's so much fun to watch. And you saw the first interaction with him in Pulisic. I was like, uh-oh, yeah. I forgot about that as an element. Osorio, Kay, all these guys. So you have to be happy and excited for them and for the sport in this region, because one more strong national team, strong country, just makes CONCACAF better.
Kalen, give me the other side there. I mean, we're like, you know, I think we've tricked ourselves here. We've been trying to make the headlines for Canada for so long. I've been rooting for them from afar for so long, but it was always sort of like, yeah, but until it's against us, and now it's right. against us.
No, you guys were doing them as the kind of like cool underground hipster pick. But Canada's mainstream now. They're top of the group, you know, top of the table. So you have to maybe rethink things. And, that is an interesting thing because, like, I think we've all gotten a chance to follow this Canadian national team and see their growth and progression. And, like you go through the list, Osorio, all those guys, you see him at the end of the game. He pulls out the TFC drum. And it's kind of like, you know, so you want that to happen. The only thing I would say is, like, I even heard Berhalter beforehand, him and Herdman have a good relationship and talking about we want them to succeed and make the World Cup and all that. But at some point, this thing is going to switch. And if you're a U.S. men's national team fan, I think for the hard, you know, maybe for the ones that have been following MLS that are also tied into kind of our community or, you know, the group that we're in, I would say you could see this coming for a while. But I think this is going to be a wake-up call for, I think, maybe the casual fan that is looking at U.S. men's or looking at World Cup qualifying and saying, okay, yeah, like there's been this and that. And same, I think the same thing with Mexico, where they're learning that same hard lesson right now. But it was deserved. Like, this was not one of those situations where I think, you know, pregame, I picked Canada to win. And, you know, you come into it and you say, even without Alphonso Davies, without Eustaquio, like, they still have the difference makers in the game. Like, they have the ones that you would bet on to score a goal. And I probably 1, 2, 3 deep. And that ended up happening with Kyle Aaron, who, you know, has been one of the best strikers in CONCACAF. You saw what Jonathan David did last just a couple of days ago. So, you know, this was deserved for Canada. And I think it's going to be a wake up call. And I actually am looking forward to this shift because I think it shouldn't just be friendship. Like, it needs to switch a little bit more towards like a proper rivalry and being like, hey, like, we have to actually, and you see it a little bit happening on the pitch. But I think from the fans, you're going to start to see more of that.
So look, it's the first World Cup qualifying win for Canada against the U.S. since 1980. It's only this cycle is the first time since, I think we were doing the research before, 2002 was the last time they played. So it's not like there's a bunch of matchups recently in here for Canada to lean on.
Which is an even bigger indictment.
No,
Canada hasn't even been in the hex. They couldn't beat the U.S. because they couldn't play the U.S. because they couldn't even get to the last round of qualifying.
Which makes it all the more incredible. And Doyle said it in the jump, but I just want to reiterate it. They have not lost a game. They've played all four matches against the U.S. and Mexico, and they are undefeated. 22 points from 10 games, 2.2 points per game, plus 12 goal differential. That's 6 better goal differential than anybody else. I know Mexico still has a game to play here today. This is their region. They are the best story. Before we get into that and everything else, let's just break down what I think is the biggest play of this game. And it's pretty obvious. It's the Larin goal. 7th minute goal kick. Matt Turner, I mean, this thing is short. It's certainly just not to the place it's supposed to be, regardless of what the game plan is, whether or not he's supposed to play it short to those center backs split out wide and deep, whether he's supposed to play it to the left and try to, you know, find the head of Jesse's artist, wherever he is. Jesse comes running back. He's got no chance. Kamal Miller header, ball to the feet of Osorio, flick into Larin, 1-2 with David in behind, goal. What happened on this play? Where does the fault lie? Doyle, break it down for me.
I mean, to me, the fault is 90% with Turner. And I think Gasman and I have disagreements as to where precisely.
You talked to me. You convinced me.
Okay, so if you're a team that builds out of the back and you want to punt it long like that, if you're the goalkeeper, you have to send your center backs up. You have to push them up before you punt it long like that. And we should know this because Tim Howard did the same exact thing 4.5 years ago in that loss to Costa Rica at Red Bull Arena when Marcos Ureña scored the first goal. Like, it was the same exact thing. The U.S. had been playing out of the back. He had been passing pretty well. And Turner, by the way, completed 18 of 20 passes today. So it's not like the U.S. weren't good with him building out. Like, they were fine. He misplayed this. And the reason you push your center backs up is because if you misplay it, they can immediately compress first ball, second ball, or even play a guy offside. But because Turner didn't push that back line up, it became an instant transition. Miles Robinson got caught a little bit overcommitting to Kyle Larin. And look, you know, Jonathan David and Kyle Larin are arguably the two best forwards in the region. I don't even think it's arguable.
Yeah,
like, they are the two. Best forwards in the region. And you got 70 million.
Antonio's pretty good.
Fair. Two of the three best forwards in the region. Then you got $70 million coming right down the gut like that. It can end up pretty ugly, and it did. And just one more thing, Kyle Larin is one of those guys who has consistently beaten his expected goals over the years because he has such a short windup. Like, he does not give you anything to focus on if you're a keeper. And Turner's so great at is his timing. Like, he gets a good push almost every time going to try to stop a shot because he reads the windup and he's able to get down and, you know, cover more of the goal than anybody just about I've ever seen in MLS. If you go back and you watch this, they had a great replay from behind. Turner gets no push at all because the ball, like, Larin's windup is so short and the ball comes off his foot so quickly. It's basically past Turner before he could get a dive. It's just really superb from Canada right there. They knew exactly what they were doing as soon as the opportunity presented itself. David has a score update.
Andre Blake penalty kick save on Panama, still 1-0 Jamaica.
Wow.
Let's go,
that's
Andre.
What are we rooting for here?
Yeah, I mean, we're rooting
for Jamaica, definitely. Definitely.
Anybody listening on podcast is like, fan. Idiots, I know the score.
And obviously, as we saw in the USA-Canada game, UConn over Syracuse, obviously Kyle Larin over Miles Robinson on that big goal. But Doyle sort of touched on it.
I can't believe I didn't tweet that.
I know. Doyle kind of touched on it, but went past it. I think the biggest indictment on the goal is the quality of ball that Matt Turner plays. It's like a back hit duck that doesn't even make it to midfield. And Zardes, I think the intention is always to come back to the ball and flick it on. And I think he's caught off guard by the play, which goes to, I think he's expecting Turner to, you know, indicate to his center backs to push up a little, then he plays that ball. But also, it's still 5 to 10 yards short of where it should be.
That kept happening the first 20 minutes of the game. That, like, Milan Borjan played that exact same ball within like 5 minutes. He played it directly to Weston McKennie, and the U.S. just couldn't turn it into anything. If you look at like the first 20 minutes of the game, Pulisic's first two set piece deliveries were left short. Moussa's first long ball was left short. Borjan had that one. There was one, I think Vitoria tried to switch play and he left it short as well. Greg Velasquez, our guy from Scuffed, he did a good job of like sort of listing them on Twitter, and it was a good call. Like, it looked like both teams had trouble playing that rock hard cold ball in the first 15, 20 minutes of the game, and it killed the U.S. And, you know, when Borjan did the same thing, the U.S. were not able to punish Canada.
The other thing is, if you're going to split your center backs, you know, if you can play out without necessarily pushing them up, but you can't play straight down the middle. So you can't play a straight ball, and that's what it was. You can try and pick one to like kind of slice one or cut one to the sides, because that's where you're going to have cover. And what ended up happening was there was no cover and guys started pushing out. First touch comes through and Kyle Larin did a fantastic job of, he didn't wait to settle the ball. He immediately picked out first time touch. And from that first step in, once he gets position, Miles Robinson has no leverage there. And so he just steps in behind. And Turner, I think, is actually capable of making that save. We've seen him make those in the past. So I think, you know, from the start till even the end, it was not flattering to him. But, you know, really, even when you look at set pieces in general, and especially the goal kicks, there were a number of chances. The second chance that came in later in the game, where they actually play short and try and build out, ended up coming right back down their throats and gets turned around. And David hits the shot that Turner spills and then saves the rebound. So the U.S. really didn't seem to have a real way out of building out. From like, to be nervous as a fan on your own goal kicks is a problem. So I think, you know, that's something that I think probably falls on Greg. As far as just figuring out what's the plan here, what's the way to build out of the back, and because it wasn't just when they went long, it was when they went short too that they had some problems.
See, I didn't feel that way at all until about the last 15 minutes. Canada blitzed with the press, and there was about 5 minute stretch right there where it got a little bit dicey. But I thought the U.S. were actually good and purposeful building out. The issue to me with the U.S. is the same thing that we saw against El Salvador. It's like they cannot execute at pace, and, you know, there's just zero sharpness in the final third, no matter no matter who's out there. Whether, you know, Jossie wasn't great. Pepe came on and he ran, but like he was not sharp at all. You know, I thought Morris and Areola were an improvement over, you know, the guys who had been out there, but like they weren't great either. So it is like they know the dance steps. It's just once the music starts playing, it all happens a little bit too fast for them, and they can't turn all this, I think, really intricate possession play into the types of chances that win you games.
Yeah, yeah, building out of the back, I think, was fine through the run of play. I was more talking about the goal kicks. But I think in those moments where you I agree. And when you find those moments where you do kind of break out and you get into those half spaces, the U.S. didn't seem to capitalize at those moments and kind of elected to play sideways or backwards or didn't really have that kind of cutting edge to really run at them. And then once Canada was able to, especially with the lead, get behind the ball and kind of set their defense, that became really difficult. And then the ball, again, which is something we've talked about before, just what really wasn't moving, circulating quick enough to be able to isolate moments. And then honestly, some of it, even in those moments where we did find them, where Christian gets the one-on-one with Alistair Johnson, just lacked a little bit of confidence or quality to really kind of find the open space or turn that opportunity into something. Brendan Aaronson, same thing, had a couple nice moments where he was able to turn in those spaces. When he did play direct or kind of go directly at the line, he was able to create something, but sometimes he seemed content to come back and kind of recirculate the ball. So it just wasn't quick enough.
Dave, I know you had something to say.
I don't know. I think they said all the things that I was going to say, and which is mainly when the U.S. does break pressure, they then choose to recycle possession and not continue to use that momentum. And that was one of the killers throughout the first half. And Patrice was texting me and he was going, what is it the U.S. is trying to do offensively? He's like, every time you guys have an advantage, you don't take it. And it doesn't feel like there's a point to the attack outside of trying to find Pulisic at times, early on at least. I think the U.S. is more was more thought out that they wanted to get the ball to Pulisic, but in what area and in what dangerous way? And we were talking about using Pulisic maybe as a decoy, bring him inside across Larea and make Larea make a decision. You're going to follow the best player on the field, or does Anthony Robinson get an open lane to run into? And the U.S. doesn't feel like was purposeful in those moments. But again, the main issue is just how slow the ball moves through midfield and the decisions of when to be aggressive.
If you're the type of psycho who will actually go back and watch this game, and you want examples of what David's talking about, look at Weston McKennie's. And I thought Weston McKennie was largely very good, by the way. But look at his touch at 59:45, and then Adams has a touch about 2 minutes later. I want to say about 61:40. Pulisic has one at 78:15. All of these are examples where the U.S. have a chance to push the game forward. But instead of doing that, instead of, you know, hitting channels and getting into transition, it's almost like they're more concerned with getting back into their attacking shape. Okay, this is what we've drilled. Okay, you're over there. I'm over here. Let's play the ball back. Let's knock it around. Okay, and then we'll go. And it's like, I understand why you want to do that. I would definitely understand if it was nil-nil. And like, this is like positional play at a high level, it works. It's how Manchester City play. It's how, you know, Bayern Munich are basically a positional play team. And I understand that this is what Greg Berhalter wants to impart with the team. But like at this point, it's coming at the expense of being dangerous in transition, dangerous in the ways that Canada were dangerous, and dangerous in the ways that the U.S. have traditionally been dangerous. And I'm not going to say it straight up cost us this game because Canada is just better at this point, but it does suck a lot of joy out of watching the U.S. play, because being able to toggle between, okay, we're building up, we have our shape, we're good, to like, there's a flaw in their shape, we're going to hit it as hard as we can, we're going to exploit that, we're going to pull them apart, we're going to score a goal. Like the U.S., they have not found that switch. They have not found the ability to toggle between those two mindsets.
So in those segments you're talking about, Doyle, the second one, the one at 61, which is when Tajon Buchanan gets a shot off when the U.S. loses it and breaks. Tyler Adams steps up, wins the ball, makes an aggressive pass. It's a poor pass, loses it. And when he turns around, no one is where he thinks they're going to be. And I think you're looking at a player who plays at Red Bull and then comes to the U.S. And we've seen it less more recently under Greg Berhalter. In the beginning under Greg Berhalter, three times a game, Tyler would go and press by himself and at some point turn around and like drop his shoulders because no one came with him. But I think this was a moment where you do not have a ton of players who are ready in passive defending to take care of counter pressing and to be prepared to step on their front foot. And the only thing you see with this US team is that they should go out and play like Liverpool, not at that level. But the point is, run around like a chicken with your head cut off, because they have players who are successful like that at their clubs and that have the, you know, your 20 average age is what, 21, 22? Like, that should be the DNA of this US team. It's not. It's not Greg Berhalter's DNA. I think that's fine, but it doesn't feel like the balance has been found or an identity has been found in between.
Did you feel an intensity in this game? Like, is it simply that
no,
the intent was missing, or is there just a lack of intensity? Because honestly, while you guys talk through this, I've just watched Alphonso Davies' reaction to the Adekube goal over and over and over. And like, if you're there's joy, like we're not feeling that right now with the US. So I wonder. I don't want to say, hey, this is an effort issue. I think intensity is different than effort, right?
Can I give you a quote, Greg Berhalter? The result hurts. The performance doesn't hurt
today.
Yeah. Sorry, did I just derail Weavey?
No,
I'm trying to do the thing where you reevaluate, where you go through your brain and like sort of tick through some of the observations and the points and the feelings that you have, because feelings in these games sort of override everything else, and sometimes that can cloud you. But
so
I'm trying to think of clear goal scoring opportunities. That's what I'm trying to think of, basically.
Yeah, and this was something that I was sort of alluding to in the last game, and I'm not 100% sure about it, and I'm sure everyone's going to complain about it, but I do wonder with this team, like, how excited they are to play El Salvador and even to play Canada. And maybe it'll change now because they've lost. And I understand they lost in Nations League, but I don't know how many of these guys remember that or were a part of it or care. And so that's why I kind of wonder how different this team will look in a World Cup, because they will qualify for the World Cup. We are second in qualifying right now. Don't, Doyle. Don't try and make a face. Don't do a look. What'd you give me the percent last time? We were 94%.
Well, look up the percent. I don't know what it is, but I'm just going to throw it out there. Canada, 22 points. U.S., 18. Mexico still to play on 17. Panama currently down 1-0 to Jamaica on 14 and Costa Rica on 12. You would think Panama is the only realistic shot to catch.
U.S. is in top four at the end of this cycle. You can take me out behind the shed and finish me off.
Hold on.
I will never be on the show again.
You're going down to top four? You got to say top three. If you're saying we're going to the World Cup, you're not putting us in a
playoff.
If
the U.S. is playing New Zealand in Qatar, I think we're going to the World Cup. Wow. But,
disrespect.
And so I do still wonder, and I think part of that is you're talking about young players. Who's the leader? How are you focused professionally to play at a high level if you're not that ready for this game? There's a million other elements that go into this. But I think I agree with what you're saying, Weeby, except you have a guy like Serginho Dest who was up for this game, and we haven't seen him. So it's been hit or miss, where there's been games where Serginho Dest looks casual and not that locked in or not that sharp. But then you have Miles Robinson, who was incredible in the fall, and it felt like he was asleep in large moments of this game. So I think it's hit or miss, and I think part of that goes down to a young group and then maybe a lack of leadership or a lack of individual responsibility for young players who aren't prepared to have the team on their shoulders.
I'll say there's like Miles Robinson and I think Matt Turner, you know, maybe MLS players being out of season here, but it didn't hurt Kamal Miller, didn't hurt Alistair Johnston, didn't hurt Mike Anthony Kay or Jonathan Osorio.
Well, may have hurt Mark Anthony Kay, and I love Anthony Kay.
That's a fair one. I was thinking of MLS players. I threw the wrong one out there. Yeah.
Like you got to play, man. You got to win these. Well, you got to get a point. Oh well.
But so then the other part to me is, have a team that goes in and feels like they're attacking their opponent, and that's where the DNA and the philosophy of this team is, I think, frustrating for a lot of fans. It doesn't feel like this is a group that plays on the front foot and feels like they're going out to win games. It feels like at times they're going out to not lose. And they're better than most of their opponents in qualifying.
It feels like they're going out to execute the system. Like, ooh, we want to show that we can do this. And like that has merit. Like the US has generally created more and better chances than their opponents throughout qualifying. And they have been very good defensively. And like there's a lot of stuff that suggests it's working. But at some point, You gotta make them feel you. You gotta make them feel like they are swimming upstream. And the U.S. net, like never, even against El Salvador, like it never really feels that way. It never feels like, oh my God, they just have no prayer. This U.S. team is just taking them apart. And like, it's not going to happen every game. It was not going to happen in this game, but like, it hasn't happened at all.
I want to read this quote. We're in the midst of the part of the show where the press conference quotes are rolling in as we have this conversation. So here is Greg Berhalter. Quote, "We were on it, dominating with a lot of physicality, a lot of speed in our play. Canada didn't have a lot of rhythm. I don't think we created a lot of clear-cut chances we should have finished off. It was more lack of chance creation or chance created, period. Or chance created precision." Sorry, I just inserted it in there. But you understood what I'm saying there. I think he's right in a lot of ways about sort of the press. Now, Canada and game states, I mean, they score a goal in the seventh minute. They're not going to try to possess and push up on you. But Canada was sloppy, and I thought we did a pretty good job actually turning them over and putting them in uncomfortable positions, especially in the first half. They didn't have rhythm. Like, I don't think there was any point where it was like they're pinging the ball around, really putting us under pressure consistently. The speed of play for the U.S., we've gone over that. Not sure about that. But, yeah, no clear-cut chances. Kaelin, where do you stand on this performance for the U.S.?
I thought the U.S. was actually in okay shape at halftime. I was thinking, you know, they had about, I think, over 60% of the ball at that point. Canada had hurt them, obviously, with the 7th-minute goal or 8th-minute goal, and seemed to be content to sit back a little bit. I mean, even their we'll sort of celebrate Kyle Aaron and some of the attacking talent on the pitch, but I thought their defensive work rate was very good from Canada as far as sticking, even Tejan kind of tucking back inside and helping out defensively, and saw a couple plays where he was able to even defend Dest and frustrate him. So I think like the U.S. actually was all right. They were doing okay with the ball. They had the big chance, obviously, on the set piece that came where Weston gets up and scores, or almost scores. Incredible save there. So I felt like it was going to come. I think in the second half, it didn't seem to there wasn't really, I think, somebody that was maybe willing to grab the game or find a moment. There were some changes that were made. Yeah, there was the Areola chance. Pepe got around it, but I just never anything that was really cohesive. So I think I can understand from Greg's perspective to some degree that like the performance, because I think at halftime we got together and said this like the performance so far is all right, except for just a really bad goal. But that played into Canada's hands, and I thought they managed the game really well, and then looked more likely to, especially as things started to open up, to get the second.
Let me ask this question. If we were going to draft attacking players off these two teams, how long would it take us to draft a U.S. player? I'm not talking about this game. I'm talking about we beat around this bush a lot. We're like, hey, the top two attacking talents, this, that, and the other, you know, Laren and David. Like, if you're going to start that draft, who do you take number one? Doyle, you got the first pick. Who you take?
I mean, Alfonso Davies.
Okay, so that's a candidate. By the way, Canada win this game with Alfonso Davies on Twitch in Germany, like celebrating in a kit with his dad.
Wait, I want to redo my pick. Okay. I want Kyle Laren, UConn legend Kyle Laren.
Kyle Laren, by the way, we need to talk about him. He's got the most goals in CONCACAF qualifying, whether it be when he was second, I think, in the first round with 5. He had two goals against Haiti in the second round. He's got 5 now.
He's the all-time leading scorer for Canada now.
Past Diro. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, respect to him. Second
it helps
pick.
When you play a lot more games because you actually get into the final round of tournaments and qualifying. I
mean, how long does it take? Second pick, Kaelin, who you take? We have Laren off the board. You can take David.
David, yeah. I mean, because part of it is also on form, right? And like, it's not just about the overall quality, because I put Christian up there, you know, probably above both of those guys.
If there's a game in 3 days.
Yeah, then I'm going Jonathan David, probably number one. The guy is just on a heater, you know, and like and then I just think also we'll get to that, but the number 9 position for the U.S. is still a problem, and you get like, you just look at those guys, I don't know, as a former striker, like seeing the combination play between the two is something you don't generally see a lot anymore, and the way that they're able to kind of have that sense and take two good center backs like the U.S. even though the shape, and we can go through how the goal kick was taken and the formation and all that, but that's real quality there between those two. And it just feels like across the pitch, well, you want to go back to it, because Tejan might be right up there for 3 days too.
Well, yeah. You guys didn't include Fonzie because Doyle went back off him, so yeah. It goes Laren, Fonzie, right? Or would you take
you're
Jonathan?
Going at it least, goes, you're, the point it we're trying to make deep, here, yeah, easy. We're really belaboring this point. The point is that Alphonso Davies is the best player in the region. Jonathan David and Kyle Larin are two of the three best center forwards in the region, and Larin and David can both play other positions, and they play together really well. And, you know, Tajon Buchanan is probably the closest thing anybody has to Alphonso Davies at any position in the entire region. So I think you go four deep with Canadian attackers before you get to a single U.S. attacker.
Well, okay, so that means we're going to start with Kyle Larin. Let's just give him his love here. We gave you the particulars. I mean, this is a guy who is at the top of the goal scoring chart for his country and probably has two World Cups at least in him to go, with a upwardly mobile, confident team that understands who they are and has rallied around that. Dave, that's pretty cool. I was at the Orlando City draft table when they drafted Kyle Larin, and they were like, Adrian Heath was ecstatic. And to see it get this far, it's just, I mean, it's painful today, but it's awesome.
And you look at, obviously the way he got to Europe was awkward, weird,
messy.
It made it really tough. And then once he got there, he had a tough time, and you know, there's nothing wrong with it, but how many players have we seen have that situation and they either sort of fall by the wayside and 2 years later you're like, oh, this guy plays in this league? Like, how's Poland? Or they come back to MLS and maybe they find success with another team. And so Kyle Larin, to his credit, put his head down. He went to Belgium on the loan, started to score goals, found his feet at a high level, has come back, and at Besiktas has done his job, which has been multiple roles. He has played out left and he has played center forward for Besiktas. They won the league last year. I think they set the records for goals scored in a Turkish league season, and then came back this year and, I don't know, opened it up and let everyone beat them in Champions League, but were competitive and fun to watch as they did it. And so Kyle Larin, I think that's the big moment in his career, and credit to him of he went to Europe. It didn't work. And so many players, it's a new situation from there, and he was able to stick to it. And I wouldn't be surprised if Atiba Hutchinson has some credit here of keeping him at Besiktas and helping him stay grounded. Exactly. And Alphonso Davies on the goal today called him Mr. Besiktas, so he might be taking that title over from Atiba Hutchinson when he retires, and to keep himself steady. So he comes back to the national team, and you have to remember, at the beginning of this qualifying, Canada still had to get into this octo. Jonathan David didn't travel for a single game. Lille wouldn't let him leave France to come to North America. Kyle Larin was the center forward for all of that. Then you have games where Alphonso Davies doesn't come. Kyle Larin is the go-to guy who they play through. And in this game, with no Davies and no Eustáquio, he scores the goal. He has been the one guy when other pieces have come in and out and haven't traveled. And, you know, Atiba comes but doesn't go to away games, only plays home games. Osorio's been injured. Tejan's developing, doesn't get called in, doesn't play all the time. Kyle Larin has been the one consistent piece. It's why he's atop the goal scoring. And he's still, what, 26?
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about the finished product. We're talking about a guy who's going to continue to score goals. And from a club point of view, I think can go fairly high, even above what he's done with Besiktas.
How do you guys feel about goalkeeper pants? Pro, con, no? Milan Borjan? I'll say this. I know I'm never going to take the bait here. Doyle's like angry. He's like, this is some absolute BS. I don't talk about this.
You're just like, I'm an old Metro Stars fan. And like, how could you ask out of a Metro Stars fan?
It's fair.
Grafer's pants.
Yeah, I see. Yep, you know, I would go back into the early 90s in Wichita, Kansas, and the depths of the Kansas Coliseum. You got to wear them in indoor soccer. One thing I'll say about the goalkeeper pants, we've already praised Borjan. He's been incredible. I hope he comes to MLS. I want to watch him every week. I Googled Milan Borjan goalkeeper pants, and nothing came back. That is a failure of marketing for Milan Borjan, and whoever makes those pants, that must be rectified.
Just whoever. What are you talking about, man? His family makes them.
Really?
Those things are homemade. I don't know. I'm just making that
okay
up.
Well, see, that's a great story. I would buy them. Like, help me out, Milan. Let's go to the U.S. and let's talk about the attacking side of things. It's disjointed. It's slow.
Bring up one more Canadian player, though, before we go from them?
Yeah.
Because I talked about Kyle Larin at the beginning of qualifying. Sam Adekube has been huge for Canada. And when they came into qualifying, we didn't know how Herdman would use Alphonso Davies. because he was a left back purely at Bayern. He'd emerged as the best left back. How do you use a left back to still be the best player on your team? Adekube played as left center back in a back three. And as he's developed over the last 2 years and shown that he can kind of cover that whole left wing by himself, it let John Herdman push Alphonso Davies up into the attack more often. And you've seen over this round of qualifying that Davies' free role has been great for Canada. And it's the emergence of Adekube that's created that. And he scores the goal here. He was awesome against the U.S. down in Nashville. And he was incredible against Mexico as well. And then obviously found the snowbank as one of the iconic moments, I think, in Canadian soccer history. And then this goal's, the U.S. is ragged. They're going for a goal. It's late, but that's not an easy goal. The touch blows by Miles Robinson. And then you got to dribble 40 yards and then takes the early shot. And Matt Turner doesn't even get a dive on it. He has been instrumental to everything Canada's done under John Herdman, and he deserves all his flowers now coming off this one.
Hits the yoga celly. Was well done. Let's get to the U.S. attack, too. Well done, Canada. You deserve all the plaudits. You deserve number one in the octagonal. You deserve your place in the World Cup, which I'm now with Doyle on. You can just safely say it and celebrate it, I think. On the U.S. side, I think we feel like a team that's going to qualify for the World Cup. I don't feel existential dread about that, and maybe that will come. You know, that pit can grow quickly in this region.
Javane Brown own goal, 1-1.
Ay. There's a little bit of existential dread. Just reintroduce it right back into the system. But it does feel like a team right now that, like, if the World Cup is in the fall, it doesn't feel like, what U.S. fans, I think, want is not just to make the World Cup. That's the baseline. That's what we miss. That's what we need. We must have. But I think we also want this sort of, like, this place that we could potentially reach, this greatness that we haven't had before, that maybe these players, this collection of guys has hints of, right? Or has the pedigree of, or is at clubs that would suggest they could have this ceiling that's higher than we've ever seen before. And I think what's frustrating, Killian, is that we just, especially attacking wise, don't feel like we're like even reaching for that ceiling sometimes, and certainly not touching it. At least not with our best players, our Christian Pulisic, for instance, or at the number nine position, or consistency on the wings outside of maybe Timothy Weah.
I hear that. But the only thing I would say is one, we do just want to make the World Cup. And then two, you know, it is about getting guys in form. And I think right now, when you look at the group across the board, right, Pepe's going emerged to be this kind of standout star with, you know, huge potential and also beginning to realize that, right? He makes the move. Berhalter's talked about kind of walking that back a little bit as far as like, hey, he's 18 years old. We believe in him. He's the future of this whole thing. But right now, there's a lot on his plate, and we're going to kind of bring him back. I personally would have liked to see him start tonight. And I think that's a big question as far as like, is the best thing for Pepe to slow him down a little bit, let him adjust, build his way back up to form? Or does he have enough quality, which I think he does, to be in the starting lineup right now as a number nine? And playing in a game of this magnitude. Now, same thing, you lose Weah. We find out about that like 3 days ago, right? 2 days ago, whatever it was. So that's not helpful, because he had built a nice relationship. And then, you know, you just lose one step to the next where it's like, okay, you want to get Brendan Aaronson on the pitch, but maybe if Christian's not doing it, then you have the option to take him out and let Brendan go from the start. And I just think when you lose some of these pieces one by one, it knocks down. Jordan Morris is coming back, right? We still believe in his big future, but he's only played how many games? So he's not available to really push from the start. Hasn't had club minutes, I mean, hardly at all, except for maybe one game in the playoffs he had to start. So I just think as far as the attack goes, it's not just about the quality, because I do think the quality is there. I'm worried about the depth, particularly at the number nine position, because we've used Ferreira, who's more of a false nine, and had his opportunity, wasn't able to take it. And then tonight, Jossie, who I thought was solid, good hold up play, you know, honest, does the job, works hard, presses, but not able to create his own opportunity, not able to do what, you know, it's hard to compare, but Jonathan David or Kyle Aaron being able to just create an opportunity out of nothing. That's not who he's ever been. And, you know, it's unfair to expect that from him.
He's not Pepe either, though. Like, we don't have a center forward. The American center forward who can do that is Jonathan David. Brooklyn's own. You know, like the whole issue, Kalen, is like there's no like the combination play happens so slowly that every U.S. forward now is looking to attack service that's happening against a set defense that can just attack the ball. And like the wingers are not, you know, they're not beating the other than Timmy Weah every now and again, the wingers aren't really beating their guys off the dribble, getting to the end line for pullbacks. Like I get where you are on the center forward issue. I struggle blaming them. You know, whether it's Pepe hasn't scored in 12 hours for Club or Country, by the way. He's just like 720 minutes now. But like whether it's Pepe, Jossi, or Ferreira, and I know Ferreira missed a sitter the other day, like they are not getting the type of service that we have seen other forwards in this region get.
Yeah, I agree. I wouldn't say I'm blaming them, more as like evaluating the difference or the gap between where Canada's at as far as their attack and where we're at right now. So I just think the one thing I'll say about Pepe and the reason why I was eager to see him play regardless is even though he may not be creating his own opportunity, he does find opportunities. Even tonight where there was one where he just kind of gets to the right spot and he shanked it, like he wasn't able to get around it, but where he's able to just kind of sniff a ball out that lands in the box that when he's in form, he can then put away. And so I think he's able to, he may not create something where he's going to beat a guy necessarily off the dribble or anything like that, but he does seem to find himself in spots where he gets an opportunity that other number nines, I think, in our pool are not finding, at least.
How about center back? News breaking just now, and I don't even know if it's news. It's hard to tell. I just listened to the interview as you guys were talking. Sounds like Chris Richards may have a broken foot. That's a maybe broken foot was the quote there from Greg Berhalter. So, you know, I don't want to speculate here. I just want to talk about the center back duo and the consistency that has been or hasn't been there. And there's a lot of things to blame for that, and that's form and injuries and other things. But we've had, let's see, six different combinations. Today it was Richards and Robinson. Walker Zimmerman had hamstring tightness. Apparently he passed a test, you know, to see if he was ready this morning, but he was on the bench. It was a precaution. They held him out. Had it been Richards and Zimmerman, that would have been three straight games with those two, but only twice during the octagonal. We back-to-backed duos. That was early on against Canada and Honduras, Robinson and Brooks, and then El Salvador and Jamaica, Richards and Zimmerman. What do you make of the consistency in the pairing in the back right now? I don't think that they had a bad game. They had a bad moment or two, but that was the difference in the game. Doyle, what do you think about the U.S. center backs at this moment in time?
I think they've generally been really good. Miles Robinson had a bad moment. I thought Richards wasn't great the other night, but he was much better today until he had to come off. I hope it's not a broken toe. And Zimmerman's been really, really good since he got his first start back in October. I'm fine with Miles Robinson and Walker Zimmerman against Honduras. I'm a little worried about Mark McKenzie as the number three guy if he has to come in, because he hasn't played much, and when he has played, he hasn't been very good. But I don't think that's an issue. I've said it a million times. I'm going to say it again. Our inability or unwillingness for the U.S. to get out in transition and drive the ball forward when the opportunity presents itself, and then the inability to execute at pace in the attacking third, whether that's from transition or from positional play. Those are the two things that's making it feel like such a slog, because the U.S. had 65% of the ball. They got into good spots repeatedly against a very good Canadian team, and then time after time after time, they did nothing with it. Part of this goes down to Berhalter. I think it is a mentality thing where they are so locked in on positional play that they you know, they're not emphasizing how important it is to punish teams when they're a little bit disorganized. But part of it goes down to the players as well. Like, if Christian Pulisic has Alistair Johnston 1v1, you have to do something other than, you know, fall on your rear end while, you know, taking a shot from 20 yards. It's like it hasn't been good enough from the guys who are supposed to be the apex players with this group. And that's why it's put the U.S. into a situation where, you know, Wednesday could very well be a must win type of game.
Do you think Berhalter will change? Or will this sort of positional play
No.
I mean, no. That's...
And I'm not even sure it's – I'm not even sure that changing the system is probably not even the right call.
Because yeah, you right. can't see, at this point.
You can see parts how do you, of it how do you are introduce working. The urgency, they just then? Have to. They just have to execute faster. And I don't know – whether it's just reps or whether it's a level of intensity or whether it's getting guys who are in good form. Because if you look at these guys with their clubs, like I said, Pepe hasn't scored in 12 hours. We all know the type of player that Christian Pulisic is right now, and it's not great. Brendan Aaronson hasn't really played since the beginning of December. Timmy White is playing, and he looks great. Like, it doesn't seem like a giant mystery to solve here. It seems just like, you know, the guys who are supposed to be good need to find places in their career, whether it means moving or whatever, where they can go out there and be good, and then that'll probably translate to the national team. So I don't think that like the answer at this point is like, oh, get rid of the system. It's not like it is working. They're giving up barely any chances, even when they're playing on the road at Canada or home against Mexico. Like, you can see that the form actually works. They just need to execute faster. Do what you've been doing faster.
Kalen, how does that happen in practice? And well, do you agree with that evaluation?
I do. And I think some of it comes down to form. When you're playing matches regularly and you're doing well, you're going to be more apt to take a risk or take a more direct approach in those moments. And it's hard to fake that. Like, if you're not playing regularly or you're not in form, like, that lack of like match speed and confidence is not necessarily going to be there. And I think that that's something that you see. It's not that Christian Pulisic doesn't have the quality to beat Alistair Johnson 1v1. Right? We know that he has the quality. It's just if he's not in form and he's not confident, it's like that extra little bit of thought instead of just kind of dragging it across or making that right decision, whether to cut inside to recognize that second defender is coming for help or to cut it across. And so it's like those are little things that I think the U.S. was missing. I mean, there are things obviously you can do if you're in more of a club situation to train with guys to like, you know, play forward or like to get in between those lines and drive directly at the heart of the back line. That's difficult to do at this stage. I think we will see if you look towards the last match of this, I would expect to see, you knew you were going to have to make changes, or I don't know if we're going to move to that at some point, but I think like Weah coming back will help because we mentioned that good form. And I don't know. I think you'll see some changes as far as being able to do it. And there were some positives to say. I know we've been negative for the
Give
U.S.
Me the positives.
Well, I thought Dest was – I was talking in the pregame Twitter spaces about being concerned about him out there. And then especially when I saw that they were lining up Buchanan on his side to try and, like, really expose any weaknesses. Now – the game ended up shifting where the goal came and the U.S. was going to be the aggressor with the ball, but Dest was very good with it. And he was like, even when they tried to be physical with him, he continued to play. His feet were excellent. Like, all the quality that he has was on display. And so I think he earned some trust from that perspective. And then I still like this midfield three. You could just lock that one in for me. I thought
Tyler Adams came off with that hamstring.
I remember that now. Yeah. Sorry. I blanked, but yeah, hamstring, that's not good. Hopefully it's not serious. So, you know, that was concerning. So geez, now I'm feeling that was like a rock.
God, the waves.
I forgot about
the
that.
Waves.
Yeah.
How do we feel about long throws?
Let's not do them anymore.
I've always every been single, against it.
Like, if honestly, if it was Zimmerman and Robinson and like a big target center for it out there, I would say go for it. But Zimmerman wasn't out there, and Jossie's good in the air, but he's not utterly dominant in the air. So every one of those long throws turned into a counterattack. Every single one turned into a counterattack opportunity for Canada. I thought the U.S. did really well putting out those fires, but like, stop it. Don't do that anymore.
Any other thoughts before we move into like what's to come? Because Wednesday is coming quick.
Well, I would just say what I was hoping to get to was just like, I think Canada deserves the credit for making it difficult.
Yeah.
And even we were talking about that midfield pairing, and was Osorio, and did they have ball winners? Like, Osorio was out there scrapping, winning tackles, like, and I thought was, you know, playing a position that we're not accustomed to seeing him do, or a role on a team that we're not accustomed to seeing him do. But I thought he stepped up in a big way. And so you just saw to a man like Kamal Miller, like a bunch of – like they were just able to really find – to make it difficult on the U.S. So I think Canada, more than anything, as much as we'll be critical of the U.S., I thought really they made it – they were the ones who made it difficult.
And the credit to Canada of – this probably isn't the game they want to play. They didn't have their two best players. And so to be able to play at this level without your two best players is impressive.
Wait. Eustachy is good. I'm not going to call him one of their two best players.
Who's their two best players?
Jonathan David and Alphonso Davies.
No, Stephen Eustachy. Jonathan David wasn't even at Gold Cup. Neither was Alphonso Davies. They made a Gold Cup semifinal because Eustachy was the best player on the team. Stephen Eustachy is one of their two best players and one of their two most important players. I would argue David's more replaceable for them because they have other options.
But only because they have Kyle Larin. It doesn't mean he's – anyway.
And they were still able to get a win against one of their big rivals, against one of the biggest teams in the region. And so I think credit to this team that they're able to win in different ways. And again, what we saw today is sort of why they – I said this on the last show. They could be fun in a World Cup. Like, I don't know what expectations will be like. I don't know what the group will be like, whatever. But if they play big teams and they play against the ball, this team is lethal in transition, and they're fun to watch when they get into it.
All right, let's turn the clock forward here. St. Paul on Wednesday, Honduras, very bottom of the octagonal, are Los Catrachos. Timothy Weah is back. How much change do you see coming, Doyle?
Well, I mean, probably Walker Zimmerman in for Chris Richards. If Tyler Adams can't go, it's Kellen Acosta as the backup six. We know from the start that Anthony Robinson was going to play all three games. I was surprised that – I thought Dest was great.
Jedi.
I was surprised he's – yeah, Jedi. I was surprised that Dest started in this one, given that it seemed like there was call for rotating the right back, given how many right backs were brought to camp. I mean, I don't know. Two, because of the injury, maybe put Pepe back in at center forward. And then the question is it time to bench Christian Pulisic?
I think if you don't start him against Honduras, it's not benching him, right? Three
fair.
Games in a week.
No, all right, that's fair. You're right. But he is the number 10. He is the part-time captain. He is the most famous and ostensibly the best player. This is a must-win game. It's a must-win World Cup qualifier. Yeah. And that's like Landon Donovan would have started this game. Clint Dempsey would have started this game. Brian McBride would have started this game. Claudio Reyna would have started this game, you know? Like they would have found it in the but like okay, even irrespective of that, just in terms of we want the US to go out there and win. Who do you start at left wing? Because Tim Weah is going to come in back in at right wing. Do you start Areola? Do you start Pulisic? Do you start Jordan Morris?
I think you stick with Christian. Must win. You got to. You need these points at home. I think you go with him. And then Aronson, who I didn't think had his best day. He had, like I mentioned, a couple moments where he was able to find space. And he's always busy, but I don't know if he did enough to keep his place. And then Jordan, I think they're using exclusively as a guy off the bench right now. He just doesn't have enough minutes to give you more than that. So I think Christian would stay.
So Honduras.
The other option is they've slid him in the at the end of the game. They slid him in the middle, and they pushed Areola into a wide space. So with Adams coming out, maybe you try and tweak things a little bit so Christian slides in. But that still doesn't leave the change you still need to make is for that sixth position because you don't want to push Weston back and force him to sit there. And Musa is not going to be that either. So you kind of need to make that position with Acosta coming in.
Two home games left for the U.S. in the octagonal. Four games overall. Honduras on Wednesday, Panama on March 27th. Visit on March 24th to Mexico and to Costa Rica on March 30th. Those are what you would probably call the two... Well, before Canada, let's say, in the hex, those would have been your two trickiest away games. Doyle says must win. I agree with Doyle. Home games in the hex. You want to go to the World Cup, must win. Dave, what's your big picture thought on the U.S. in that match? And then let's take it to Canada.
Yeah, Honduras is the worst team in qualifying. You can't afford to give up getting 3 points against them. Canada just beat them on the road. That's where they stand, unfortunately, for Honduras, and there should be no other expectation. I think Honduras, their biggest threat to you is in the attack, right? If it's Kyoto, Elise, and Lozano, that's something to worry about. And when you look at the way the U.S., I think, dealt with Canada's transition well, but allowed those transition moments to happen, I think that's the focus on the game. But in terms of the attack, if you can't, no offense to the legend, but if you can't create chances against Minor Figueroa in 2022, then that's a lot on you. And so this has to be one of those games the U.S. gets going. We've talked about it a ton. I don't think the weather helps the U.S. I don't think the atmosphere helps the U.S. Those are not positives. But if you take it on and you walk out there and you say, look, they don't want to be here, and you play from that point of that atmosphere like the U.S. did against Costa Rica in Colorado in the snow and against Mexico in Columbus in 2001, then it can play into your hands.
Let's finish this thing off. It's El Salvador for Canada. It's away for them. The final three matches in qualifying, they're at Costa Rica. They host Jamaica, and then they go to Panama. They got 22 points. Right now, they're at least 8 clear of Panama to hold on to one of the top three spots. And you can re-coronate them if you want, Doyle. Give me your quick thought on where they stand right now. Like, as we sort of wind this thing down, and I'm sure they're not winding it down. Milan Borjan is, you know, he grew up in Hamilton. He says it's his dad's birthday. I'm sure he's about to go give after it a little bit with the boys, at least celebrate. Maybe not in an adult fashion because they had a game on Wednesday, but it's a joyous moment. How do you cap it for Canada and look forward for them?
Obviously, it has been a spectacular World Cup qualifying campaign so far, and this has been like they've had a lot of good moments. This window in particular, going down to Honduras and just burying any remaining ghosts of that 8-1 a couple of days ago, following that up by beating the U.S. in a qualifier for the first time in 42 years to go, you know, miles clear at the top and basically clinch. No matter what happens down in El Salvador, they're in, and it's been masterful from John Herdman. It's been wonderful from these players. That said, for Canada, this is more like there's a chance to establish more here. There's a chance to do what the U.S. did in that 2006 cycle, when they just utterly dominated the hexagonal. And suddenly it was more than just like, oh, they get up for, you know, the Mexico games and they'll scrap past you in other games. It's like, oh no, they're going to come here and they're going to hang one on us. Canada has a chance to do that. Canada has a chance to go to Central America twice in a row and take 6 points. There's not a Canadian team in my memory that's ever done anything close to that. So I like, obviously John Herdman's not going to risk anybody's hamstrings. Like, there will probably be some really good squad rotation, but I expect to see the same Canadian team in that game that we've seen through two games, this three game window thus far. And the other thing to remember, Central American teams in the third game of these three game windows, no wins, 6 losses, 2 draws, minus 14 goal differential. Canada has much more depth than El Salvador. The U.S. have more depth than Honduras. Both teams should be able to get the job done. I'm just way more confident in Canada's ability to do so than the U.S. is at this point.
Any final thoughts, guys? Was it time to hit the dusty trail? Yeah, off we go.
The thing I would say is if they're going to add even like at Canada's depth, like Hoylett came on, was great. You know, like just phenomenal. They've got Piet, who they didn't bring in. Frazier did well. Like, they've got some pieces that they can bring in.
Cavallini scored 5 goals in the first round of qualifying, and he hasn't really been they haven't even had to like look his way. Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Canada, the story of international soccer this year by far. The biggest risers in the FIFA rankings, the biggest risers in CONCACAF. Right now, number one in the octagonal, and that's not going to change, at least today. Still waiting on results around, but we know what happened in Hamilton at Tim Hortons. 2-0. Canada. Dos a cero, their version. A big win for them. One will go down in history. Things are changing.
How do you say it in
region.
French? How do you say it in French?
Somebody else got to jump in with that one.
Un, deux, trois.
How are you going to have most of Canada saying, wait, zero? But it's not French. 2-0. Canada, yeah, winners. That's it for
Hamilton,
us.
In not Montreal.
401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com. Hit us up with anything. We'll be back on Wednesday. Pre-game Twitter spaces, as always. Post-game show, as always, going up to your podcast feed. Enjoy your week, everybody. We'll see you on Wednesday.